Hello, and you're listening to spoiler
Filled
film
conversation.
Hooray!
Indeed. And I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me to discuss this week's film of choice is Abby
Hi there.
and Anthony.
How's it going?
So, this week's film that we're here to discuss in spoiler-filled details is Runaway Train from 1985. And it's my pick, and the way it came up was Ollie, one of our missing film bin members, was looking up films that ended in years ending with five, and he mentioned this film, and then I ended up watching it, and then I just was like, let's just do this film, why not? So,
That's a perfectly true explanation, but it sounds mental.
it's almost a random choice due to circumstances, but I'm happy to champion it because when I watched it, I quite enjoyed it, and all I knew was that John Voight was in it, so that's why I kind of watched it. I like John Voight, and Eric Roberts is in it, and there's a few things he's in that I'm quite interested in. So I thought, yeah, I'll give these guys a go. They're on a train. What could be wrong with that? So that was my expectations going in. What did you guys have? What were you guys thinking? What were you guys thinking for letting me pick a film randomly? No. Well, Abby, what were you expecting from this film?
I knew practically nothing about it other than John Voight was in it. And I like John Voight. He does good work. So I was mildly optimistic.
Yeah, my favourite thing with him in is Midnight Cowboy, but I'm also fond of his work making Angelina Jolie. That was some good work. What about you, Anthony?
Well, I came into it only with the title Runaway Train and the year 1985. So I guess I was expecting like a typical 80s overblown action thing going on. Like imagine like Stallone or Schwarzenegger at their peak kind of film going on.
Yeah,
I
but
know what
it's
you
not
mean.
that famous, is it? So I don't think people mention this in the mix of other classic 80s films like E.T. or Back to the Future or something, do they?
No.
Even though
It's
it
not.
was received quite well, I think.
Yeah, it's not. It's just not one of those things that just has sort of stuck out in time and people always remember. It's just a film from the 80s that is unremarkably, a film. I don't know. That seems harsh to say unremarkable, but it has no real, people don't talk about it, is what I'm saying. So we were all pretty like, what's this about? It seems.
Yeah.
So I mean, generally, do we enjoy watching it? I mean, we'll get into the details.
Personally, not really. I didn't enjoy it that much. I felt some of the editing of the film was weird, which made it really slow-paced at times.
Like using static photographs and then having a snow effect over them. Did you notice that one? There was like one of
I
the
didn't
shot of
notice
like
that one, no.
there was
The
one of the
one.
prison that was just like still, and they just put an effect over it.
No, but I didn't notice that one. I was talking more about like constant shots of wheels turning and mountains in the distance,
Sometimes
which.
it was effective, but then other times it seemed kind of arbitrary.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but
Like, how do we transition from this scene to this scene? Just show the train wheels again.
I guess. I think it's there to build momentum and have a like you can't exactly do a film about a runaway train and not show the train running away a bit, I don't have any problems with that element of it.
True, but at some times I felt like it affected the pacing so much that it didn't feel like it should it sh felt slower than the film should have been, given that it was about a runaway train.
Okay, so it's not on the Hitchcock level of directing or anything, but I enjoyed it despite its flaws, I think. I kind of got caught up in it after a while. But what did you, I mean, did you find it all right, Dab, or?
There was stuff I liked. It wasn't perfect. And like Anthony said, there were some decisions made that weren't the best. But other stuff I like the generally speaking, the stuff that was in the control center I liked. And the stuff inside the prison looked effective, though didn't quite make sense when you thought about it.
Yeah, like, at times you felt like there was maybe budget constraints to this film. Like, there was economy. Like, they don't have a lot of film of trains crashing and stuff, which felt a bit absent. And maybe the odd shot in locations would be limited or something. It felt like it couldn't quite explore its ideas. But I think there's some good. I'll try and pull some good out of it yet while we get through the plot and the content of this film. So, not the best reception, but I'm here to champion. So, where did it begin? It began, weirdly, it was a combination of a disaster movie about a train and a Prison Break movie kind of starting us off, wasn't it? That's a bit odd, isn't it?
That did put me on a strange foot when I started a film called Runaway Train, and we spent quite a long time in a prison.
Because they're not known for their, you know, stations in prisons, are they? But, you know, that's fine. I mean, our main characters are, is it Manny?
Mm-hmm.
Played by John Voight, who's the grisliest looking prison kind of gnarly dog of a character
did manage to uglify him quite well.
He's all scars and horrible gold teeth and, like, because it's out in the cold a lot of it, he's just got this incredibly red and, like, psychotic-looking face. Just frozen, angry, hard man. So he's quite gnarled and scary-looking, which is weird, because John Voight, in his earlier days, was quite a, you know, what's the word? Not handsome, and that sounds a bit weird, but, you know, he's a fairly... Actually, John Voight's an odd-looking fellow, now I think about it. Where do you land on the how does John Voight look usually debate?
I'd agree he looks slightly strange, not your typical kind of handsome, if you will.
But you don't think gnarly and kind of hard looking, do you?
No.
I think it's because I was thinking of Midnight Cowboy, where he plays basically a male prostitute, and it's kind of like, you have to be alluring to old biddies. So I don't know. Let's not judge John Voight too harshly. I'm saying he was surprising. It was surprising how like hard looking he looked. So the other character that's in it is Duke.
Buck. I put
Buck.
Duke as well, but it's Buck.
Yeah, I think that's why you mentioned him as Duke earlier, and I was like, oh yeah, no, Buck. And he's played by Eric Roberts. Who was in The Expendables and is in one of my favourite films that we'll have to do at some point called The Immortals. Yeah, what's that, Rich? Don't know, we can't get into it. But he's good in it. you know, do you guys know Eric Roberts from anything?
Yes. Doctor Who the movie.
That's what I was going to say.
But we don't like to talk about that.
Well, I like to talk about it, but you're right, it's not the best thing ever.
But he pops up here and there, and I you know, he was on my radar anyway. But he is a prison boxer. They're both prisoners, and it's in Alaska, and he's a boxer, and he looks kind of young, and he's kind of bizarrely muscly. I didn't know Eric Roberts was cut enough to... Cut, is that the term? I'm out of my depth when it comes to describing the physique of men who box. Anyone? Boxers?
Yeah, that's acceptable. Either one of those is fine.
I didn't expect him to be, you know, believably hench, I guess. And he was. And he was like, oh, okay, you could be a kind of pikey prison boxer. Okay. But those are our main characters. In an Alaskan prison... And the kind of starting point is that John Voight has been in solitary confinement for a while, and he's being let out, and everyone's pleased, and they're showing their pleasedness by burning toilet paper and throwing out their cells and kind of rioting in the prison.
I didn't really understand why they got so heads up about that. I mean, the guards, like, they were hosing everyone down. They were all in their cells. What if they'd run out of toilet paper to burn? What are they going to do?
Throw something like a book? scary.
You'll only be allowed one book at a time, it's fine.
I never understood that mentality of, yeah, chuck everything out. Like, I guess if you're in prison, you haven't got much going on, but to just chuck everything in your cell and burn stuff, it's like you're just going to be bored later when you've thrown your book at the guards and you've burnt your toilet paper and you can't wipe your bum.
Yeah,
it just seems futile.
Punishment equivalent of throwing all the toys at the pram. You're not going to have those back now. You're still in a cage. Well done.
Yeah. But the prison break element, right, guys, happens quite quickly, because usually a film will build to a prison break slowly, and there'll be trials and tribulations, and they'll maybe hash up the plan, and they'll, like, make idea, and things will go wrong and stuff. But this one, after John Voight was out, met his friends, there was a bit of, you know, bit of a fight going on. We established that the warden doesn't like John Voight's character at all. And we have some bloodshed at a boxing match. Weirdly, not in the boxing so much as after, like, a knife fight at the boxing. So we get up and running quite quickly, is you know what I'm trying to say. But not before we get a cameo from, I want to say Trejo or Trejo. How would you guys pronounce his name?
Trejo.
Because of the Mexicans saying their J's as H's. So Trejo... Yes. Makes a tiny cameo as the other boxer who, the plausibility for me went out the window when Eric Roberts beats Trejo in a boxing match. That's not happening. But I like to see him in it. But what did you make of the kind of violence at the boxing match that kicked off?
It's one of the better inside prison sequences I've seen for genuine just... sort of animal shouting and being excited.
Yeah, American prisons, at least in pop culture and maybe even documentaries, seem quite a violent, scary place. But, you know, it's a film, so it's got to have some extra added violence. But I thought it was kind of exciting and unexpected, because you don't really know where the film's going. You're like, well, you need a train, guys, but it kind of spends a bit of time developing prison politics, but then instantly goes, let's get on with it now. Like, it starts with prison movie beginnings and then goes, no, we have to escape. So, I don't know. It was just some violence at the start to get us used to a bit of gore and a bit of, well, not does that much, really. And then it's all about John Voight doing what he said, which was getting out of jail. He pretty much cracks on with it. Like early doors, doesn't he? There's not much, you know, blueprints, is there? You know? And he gets out via a plan that combines the escape from Shawshank Redemption and that of Mr. Toad of Toad Hall from Wind in the Willows, because he escapes in a laundry basket and through a sewer pipe. Would you guys agree that that's fair, calling it that?
I suppose so, yeah.
do you guys enjoy a prison break movie?
Yeah, I do, but you can't really class this as that, because as you said, it's a prison break movie is something totally different, where you get right up into the characters and into the plot and all the little details. So I do like those kinds of movies, but here, because it was so short at the beginning, It all felt a bit cliched, like every other prison film I've ever seen.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it literally, you know, combines two prison breaks that already exist. But it was just that thing of, can you help me out, Eric Roberts? Or Buck, as he is in this. And he's like, yeah, get in the laundry basket with your bag, wheel you out, talk to... Oh, here you go, Abby, you get to name drop a wrestler.
I do, I get to name drop Tiny Lister, who is Zeus.
Tiny Lister, is that his name?
His name is Tommy Lister, but people call him Tiny because he's very big.
Irony. Clever. Yeah, Zeus. He makes the odd cameo here and there. He gets about as Zeus. There's a few other films with him in. But yeah, all he has to do is sort of, you know, wheel a laundry basket out into the outside-y washing area that he doesn't get to, and then they just pop in a shed that is conveniently unlit by the searchlights.
What was weird for me at that moment was when Buck walks in, he is completely undeterred by John Voight being stark naked and greasing himself.
Well, you know, people who have to walk in the snow having run away from a prison, you know, get cold quite quick, so oiling yourself up with, I don't know, goose fat or whatever it was.
No, I understand why he did it, but just the fact that the other guy didn't even go, oh, sorry. Nothing.
Yeah, but Ab, you haven't been in a, like, men's prison where you just have to be naked with guys sometimes. It's just the way. Not that I know.
They also insisted on doing shots of John Voight's thighs while he was greasing. It made me think, are you about to show me something that I don't want to see? No? Okay then. Stop showing me his thighs!
Yeah, John Voight does aggressively grease himself and then hop down a sewer pipe. It's a very scary interpretation of Mario. Is there a train level in Mario? I don't think so. I can't think of one. No. There might be.
Oh,
but anyway, Eric Roberts just gets to go with him on a sort of, can I come? No. Can I come? Can I come? Yeah. I guess. He's like, it's quite convenient. I mean, Eric Roberts, you know, I mean, it was quite easy for him to come. If John Voight said no, he could have just followed him anyway. It wasn't that hard. But basically, the clever thing I liked, which I haven't seen in another film, is using a thing for ratcheting a car up, what are they called?
A jack.
A jack, yeah, a car jack to bend the bars in the sewer. I thought that was like, oh, well done. Like,
I was worried that they were going to show us that in real time. Yeah. They lingered on that close-up so long.
It was clever, but it seemed a bit dubious to me. Like, would that work?
It must be pretty rubbishy bars and a pretty decent jack, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was a little too easy for them to get out, but they got a train to catch.
Yeah, so exactly. That's not the important bit.
They do a little slide down a sewer pipe into the freezing cold water outside and slowly jog through the snow to their escape, where they come across a kind of harsh, industrial-looking train tracks station, you know, isn't it?
Yeah, and we get on to a candidate for longest death in film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The driver, the engineer having that heart attack and managing to operate all of the levers on the train before dying outside.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, they break in, like, a thing, and they get some uniforms and they warm up a bit, and then they do catch this train. And rather unconveniently, as you say, Ab, the train driver, for no real fault of anyone apart from his cholesterol, I presume, has a heart attack and does, like you said, luckily presses all the switches needed to make the train run fast and not be able to stop, which is essential for a film called Runaway Train.
I don't think that's fair. I think he was already running and he tried to stop it, but he couldn't in time.
What, with his heart going like, nah, mate?
Yeah, because remember he pressed something and then the wheels went all sparky.
Oh, yeah, the brakes failed. So he tried to put them on, but they didn't work.
Yeah.
And then he, like, plummets out. And I just falls flat in the snow. What's the line someone uses later, Abby, to, like, remark upon his death?
How did he die? He had a heart attack. The old fart.
That's the only time anyone cares about him. He's like, he gets forgotten. So, I mean, people go, oh my goodness, he's fallen out the train. And then it's just, no one cares about him. Like, it's all about stopping the train then. But I kind of was a bit surprised that the prisoners didn't steal a train. I kind of thought, well, prison break, they're going to steal a train. And they literally hop on the back and are oblivious for a long time that the train is a runaway. Which I thought was kind of a different to what I was expecting, I guess.
Hmm.
Made it more of a... Then it becomes like just a disaster of misfortune, really.
Didn't you get the pun of runaway train?
What's the pun?
I don't know. As soon as I saw it was set in a prison to begin with. It's obviously they're going to be escaping to get to this train.
So they're runaways.
So they are runaways, and it's a runaway train because they're on it and they're runaways.
Ah.
Oh. There's a subtlety. It's a borderline pun, at the best. So the train is a runaway train, and they are the runaways on the train. I see. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, either way, they could have took over the train, and they didn't. They sat in the back, chatting. Oh, this is something I wanted to bring up with you guys. And Voight and Roberts have quite interesting voices, accents, would you say? Like, Eric Roberts is kind of a almost Forrest Gump-like voice. Like, a slightly more chatty and cheeky Forrest Gump voice.
Yeah, I found them a bit distracting at times. I thought John Voight's performance was at times a little shouty, but on the whole, a little different than usual and quite intense. Mm. I did quite like it. But a lot of the times he was struggling to kind of hear what he was saying, I found anyway.
Yeah, he had a kind of a slur, or I guess I put it down to sort of him being a kind of, he's a bank robber murderer, and he's probably quite a common bloke, and he's, you know, lived in a prison. He's been in prison for so long, you know, it's not exactly going to Eton, you know, like, so I put it down to a grimy sort of realistic, someone who's a prisoner might talk this way, but it was a little odd, and at times, like you say, so what was that? Something about, was that what you said? what about Eric Roberts? I just thought, at times he just seemed borderline mentally handicapped the way he would talk, but then sometimes just normally kind of southern.
He did. As a pair, I found them quite annoying, to be perfectly honest.
They'd have a good run of things, and then suddenly you go, okay, now you're irritating me again.
Yeah.
Well, the film, in a way, is all about their dynamic, because John Voight's just sort of harsh and a realist and is very pessimistic and kind of, you have to do everything yourself in life, and I wish I could be intelligent enough to do a good job, but I can't. And he's kind of takes on a sort of harsh life lesson tutor of Eric Roberts, who's a bit more naive and kind of still hasn't had his soul crushed by being in prison yet. So he's a bit more, I don't know, just more positive and a more of a tag-along who kind of admires John Voight's character, I think. And I guess if you don't get on board with their dynamic, which is a strange one, you're going to be like, just hope you all die and crash. Like, what about you? Were you on board with it? Do you enjoy their back and forths and their weird relationship they share?
Some of the time, because it was a dynamic I hadn't really seen before. Or at least not so consistently.
Yeah, it wasn't like a buddy thing, like you get in a lot of Hollywood movies. Like, you'd be expecting a sort of, oh, they don't get on at first, and then they will, and it'll be kind of fun. There was proper harsh tension at times between them, and, you know, they'd get on to a point, but then the criminals in them would kind of come out, and they'd be a bit more ruthless and selfish. Or at least John Voight's character, anyway.
Mm.
But, you know, we have a bit of build-up, as all disaster movies, you know, it's like, what will go wrong next? And then it brings in once the train is going too fast and is on a road to disaster, or a train track to disaster, that's when we bring in the control centre, and that's kind of the other part of our focus. It starts to resemble a little bit the film The Taking of Pelham 123. It's got similarities, I think. It's certainly in story anyway, and style. It feels very gritty and real when you're there, I think. What did you guys make of the control centre group?
I like them. It was a nice selection of people. They were all very different to each other and came from different places.
Yeah, I like the... there's a black guy with glasses, and he's kind of... he seems a bit more like contemporary. He's not like a fuddy-duddy who's worked in the job for years. He's sort of a little bit more light-hearted and stuff.
Mm.
And then there's a kind of useless woman who isn't really interested in the job and is just kind of not even excited by the fact that there's like a runaway train. She seems kind of bored of life. And also the man in charge, what was he like? I mean, it's finding him hard to describe. Who was he, Abby?
There was the sort of supervisor guy, but then there was also the manager, the older guy as well. The supervisor, I like the actor, and I've only ever seen him in Flashdance before this. So for him to suddenly pop up again after not seeing him in anything for ages was really nice.
Yeah. He plays a correctly stressed guy, fairly normal man. You know, he's got a little bit of story to him, but fundamentally they're all quite a sort of slice of life group of people, aren't they? They're just sort of normal people, aren't they? Mm. What did you think, Anthony? Did you think much of the control center stuff?
Honestly, no. It's like, obviously it was needed, otherwise there's no other way to kind of like dump this exposition on the audience as to what's going on. Mm. I don't know, like there was a nice mixed bag of people, and I thought it was going to go better than it did. But again, it all just seemed so cliche. Like the events that were going on was like, I've seen this before in other movies.
Yeah, you got things like, oh no, they can't slow down, and they're going to hit a train. Oh, they have, and that's shut off more of the controls. Oh, that means we can't stop them. You know, there seem to be lots of contrived reasons to keep making things that the train couldn't stop. And then it's like, oh, they can't go over the bridge at that speed. What if they... No, they won't. It's like, there's an hour left. The bridge is going to be fine. It'll fall apart yeah. a bit. But like, it felt like there was a few going through the motions to it, because it's a disaster movie and it hasn't got that many people in. And so like in a different film, like, say, Poseidon Adventure, you're like, anyone could die at any point. Whereas this is like, well, we're going to be getting towards the end before we see a death toll or proper disasters, isn't it?
Yeah. Because of like the control room scenes, I felt that they just added more in slowing down the pace of the film.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I thought they had a nice stressed out kind of, like they would argue and bicker amongst themselves, and it was kind of a little work politics in there, so I thought it was a bit more interesting.
A little bit. I felt like there was potential there, but none of the characters really held my attention that much. Even the main guy who was like getting all stressed out was like, that's still his only personality trait, is getting stressed out and going to the toilet, I guess.
The poor guy got interrupted both times. The second time went particularly badly.
It did. And that, in fact, because we could jump about, we don't have to follow this linear like a train. That is an interesting bit I want to bring up. And one of the characters we establish in the prison is the warden being a bit of a git. But fair enough, he's a warden with loads of harsh prisoners to deal with. He has to be a bit of a hard nut, and no problems there. But the thing they do to make you hate him is, he's a bit of a git, but the thing that pushed him for me was in that scene where the stressed out controller guy goes to the toilet and has just told off the warden for, like, you know, the guy's trying to stop a train. It's an emergency and you're pestering about escaped prisoners. He doesn't want to know. He gives him a row and the warden doesn't like that. And the warden follows him to the toilet and then starts flushing his head in the slightly horrible toilets. And, like, beating him up and threatening him. And he's like, you're a civilian. You're not in prison now. What are you beating up this guy for? Were you guys, like, going, oh, you.
Yeah, the whole thing just seemed a bit pathetic, didn't it? It's like, do we really still do that? Flush people's heads down the toilets.
Like, proper,
and
like...
And it seems so harsh as well.
Yeah. Like, because essentially this warden is not in his work anymore. Yes, he's got the prisoners, but he's just like, you can't bully civilians, you mad idiot. And it was just so horrible. And the guy, you know, I kind of wanted the guy to be like, to stick up. I mean, obviously, once that happens to you, you'd be like, oh, whatever you say. But it was just, oh, come on, punch him in the face, guy. Stick up for yourself. So at that point, I was like, right, the warden dies or I'm walking. Like, this warden is a git and he must have comeuppance. I think that was, I mean, it's a cheap way, because essentially he's a good guy. He's getting back prisoners who've committed crimes and are horrible convicts. And yet the movie wants us to kind of go with the convicts and want them to at least partway succeed, don't they?
I did like the moral ambiguity of that. Where the good guys and the bad guys were both good and bad guys.
Yeah, it's like there's regular people who you obviously should think, oh, I hope they all turn out all right, apart from heart attack. I can't do anything about that. And, you know, in a way that at least one of the prisoners isn't going to make this. It's kind of the rule of films is no runaway train escape movie type thing is going to end with everyone walking off into the sunset all happy, are they? You know?
Mm. Yeah.
And I think coming back to this element of, that you mentioned, Anthony, of like cliche, is I kind of was like, well, Voight will die and the other guy will learn a lesson. Maybe he'll grow up a bit or something. It'll kind of, there's no way Voight is walking away from this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought maybe he would until right at the end where he was heckling the helicopter from inside the train. It's like, oh, okay then, you're not, no, okay.
I guess so. Well, okay, to jump back before the helicopter then, there's lots of little things that happen with the train. I mean, they discover the train is out of control, they're not sure what to do, but luckily, there was a sleeping woman we don't know about till about halfway through the film on the
How
train.
How lazy was that excuse that she was there, though? Oh, I must have just fell asleep. It's like, no.
That's one of the things that made me think that this was based on a book. I haven't managed to back it up looking on Wikipedia or anything like that. But I just feel like a few things panned out like, this was probably a book and that probably made more sense when it was written originally.
Apparently, it was written originally as a screenplay by Akira Kurosawa, who was going to direct it himself. But it didn't. So maybe it comes from like that first kind of draft of it.
Yeah. Cause
it did have a chaptery feel. Like, I would have guessed the same too. And I mean, they said at the start of the film, like, it was a screenplay based on the screenplay of Kurosawa. Mm. And, you know, you kind of go, well, in that case, I mean, it's the offcut of Kurosawa, so it's not his best and it's not him doing it, but still it's like, oh, well, this must be, you know, it kind of adds a legitimacy. You're like, even if, you know, you make a, if you're offered the offcuts of Kurosawa, you're like, yeah, we can still make a film out of that. Don't worry about it. Kurosawa is a genius. Can't go wrong. And I mean, you know, it kind of, because he didn't end up doing it, it's kind of like, it's probably good that he didn't, because it isn't that brilliant, but it's still interesting that it would have potentially have been like a, you know, legitimate cinema legend doing a runaway train movie. But for, you know, whatever reason, budget constraints or whatever, that it didn't go in the hands of Kurosawa, it just got passed on, and we got Eric Roberts and John Voight travelling through Alaska. You know, why not?
And the woman.
And the woman, yes, that's right.
Rebecca De Mornay.
Yes, and who does she play? Just some chick on a...
Sarah.
Was this Sarah?
Yeah.
And she is the other person who works on the train. I like that... The control center thought that the only guy driving the train was dead. They didn't know she was even working, and she was asleep and hidden from us. Until it's like, we need a woman in this film. Ah, here we go, and we need an excuse for the horn or whatever has to sound in order for the control. I don't know. They had the horn somehow went off at the optimum time, so they didn't just derail the train and stop it. And then from that point on, it's a vulnerable woman with two convicts on the run, and it's all more exciting, and you know, it becomes a kind of three-way story then, I guess.
I did, in small part, like her character, because you couldn't quite tell what she was thinking or what she was going to do. She had a similar air of kind of chaos to her that the other two did, too.
Yeah, that was... Well, I thought she kept having this look in her eye like she was going to do something, and then she didn't. She just kept waiting for it.
Yeah. And it's a shame, like, by the end, she's just reduced to a kind of sort of romantic interest, I guess. Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I think they all have some nice character development on the journey. I think a lot happens to them. I mean, essentially what happens is the prisoners... I mean, Eric Roberts is a bit of a get to her, she like turns up, they're like, what's going on? They establish, you know, the scenario and that the front of the train is inaccessible, but they can, you know, there's ideas to slow it down, but fundamentally we can't jump off because we may probably break our necks, you know, like, I thought, maybe you can jump off a train, I don't know, you might be alright. I mean, chances are you'll break something and be caught by the police if you don't die. What do you guys think about, could they have jumped off this? Like, it was about 70 miles an hour at one point, maybe 80. It's quite fast.
But they managed to slow it down a bit. But we never established by how much.
So you think...
Because once
probably
they've done...
I'd say it's still over 50 miles an hour.
So maybe not jump off.
No.
It's just snow, well, though.
I think if I was definitely
that's
going
fast.
To crash.
Yeah.
If it was like, oh, we're going to derail, jump off before the derail, maybe give it a chance. I don't know. I'll weigh it up when I'm stuck on a runaway train. But this woman was kind of interesting because she kind of bonds with them through circumstance. Like, they're kind of forced to band together to save all of their lives. But Eric Roberts is kind of horrible to her straight away. He's all like, oh, hello, I'm a criminal and I may have been a rapist. So instantly I'm being all, oh, hello, like, now's my chance with the woman. What do you mean? She's literally just got you. What?
See, that's what, in a separate conversation about this movie with Rich, I wondered if Buck was gay because he was so weird when a woman came. Like, he suddenly had to remember to be masculine.
I do not understand. What he came across as gay because the first thing he wanted to do was rape a woman.
But that's the thing. It just felt so... it was just the way he went, oh, woman, I'm really aggressive and I'm going to rape you.
Just... Oh, so he's sort of overcompensating for how he perceives he should be because he doesn't want, like, he doesn't want it to come out that he was raping men or something. So it's like, why are you in jail? I raped people. Oh, was it, what happened? Oh, it was girls. Yeah, girls. Do you think it was a bit of that? I don't know. I didn't get any of that.
Something weird about it for me.
He was just weird.
Yeah.
He was just a weird guy. But you know, I can't quite remember the circumstances exactly, but they're forced into trying to slow the train down by cutting lots of dodgy, cable-y things between the carriages, and that will power it down a bit more. And so they rely on each other to not all die, and that kind of makes them come together as united, which I thought was good, because you didn't want to have this idea that at any point the prisoners could go crazy and, like, just kill her. You know, you didn't want that, really. So I thought that was good that they were a team until tension gets, like, to them quite... kind of towards the end, things are kind of getting a little bit more desperate as less and less options are available, and they're going to have to, like, basically, the control room decides there's nothing we can do anymore. We're going to have to just let it... We're going to have to derail the train. And I think, they know they're going to die, or they suspect the train is, you know, doomed eventually. And it gets a bit more desperate, especially when this helicopter you mentioned turns up. Weirdly, the warden's like, right, tell me where the train is. I'm going to fly a helicopter and arrest them on the train that is running away. And then I'll die in the train with them because I'm an idiot. What was he thinking? Like,
a guy got killed just trying to get on the train in the first place. He took that as a challenge.
Yeah. It was all... By that point, I felt that was a kind of tipping point of insanity when there was just this guy dangling over icy mountains trying to get onto a train.
Surely...
Which is weird, because that's kind of what I was expecting when I first...
Yeah.
Kind of imagined the film would be like all kind of high action like that.
Yeah.
But like when they only kind of throw it in right at the end, it just seems a bit silly.
They kind of build this story of gritty escapeness, and it's not too insane. It's unfortunate and a little implausible, but it's not like massively insane action stuff. And then it is just like, dude, if they derail and die, I mean, if he doesn't die, you can arrest him. If he dies, job done. You know, why are you so fussed on you getting your man and getting him back? Like, he'd once fought back in prison so much that he's willing to, like, risk his life and his, like, colleagues. And literally, like, they go through a bunch of tunnels and it's like, you're just literally hanging onto a ladder in the middle of, like,
the sky.
The air now
yeah.
for ages. It kind of was quite drawn out at that point.
Yeah, especially as it kind of comes to nothing because he gets on the train... follows Voight into a room, gets knocked out, and it's like, oh, okay. Is that it? Is that all we've got? From, like, the man hanging off a helicopter ladder for the last 10 minutes?
I guess. I think the thing that made it more interesting is the build-up to it, where John Voight realises that the helicopter is the warden, and he's... And, weirdly, like, the way they get to Seymour is the police, one of the police officer hanging from the ladder falls and smashes in the window. And it's like, ah, you know, like quite a brutal thing to happen. And it's like, oh, the warden. And then Voight is like, ah, I'm going to get you. And he's like waving his fists and shouting stuff like, you can't get me. I'm in a train. What are you going to do? You're in a helicopter. You're never going to catch me. I'm not going back to jail. Properly going mental through this broken window, just like really like, oh, like olive oil, like in a Popeye cartoon, waving his arms. It's amazing. And it's like, and then, oh, this is one of the scenes we haven't mentioned that's quite tense and kind of interesting for the dynamic of the three people. Is before that, they have to get onto the front of the train to try and, like, stop the train. Mm. And Eric Roberts, his character, mans up. John Voight's got an injury, so he can't really climb very well. And so Buck decides, I'll climb along the train. And he tries, and bless his cotton socks, he gives it a good go, but he fails. And because he tries to get back in and after failing, at that point, Manny's like, what? You're giving up? Like, he's cheering him on, and, like, he's like a dad at football practice while he's trying to climb on the train. He's like, go, you can do it. Climb the train. And as soon as he gets back in, he's like, what? You're not coming back in,
get
mate.
Back out, yeah.
And he just, like, goes absolutely ballistic with him. And he's just kicking him in and shouting at him and trying to shove him back out. And he just loses it, doesn't he? Like, desperation just kicks in.
Absolutely flips his lid. I didn't understand what was going on for a while. Then I understood. And then when they had that cool down, it was like, yeah, cool down. Because you've gone mad.
Yeah, because essentially it breaks down into like a fight. Because Eric Roberts is a boxer as well. Or rather, you know, the character. I keep flipping and flopping between Buck and Eric Roberts. But like, because he's a boxer, he can handle himself. But because John Voight is like a hard-as-nails prison killer, it's kind of like, oh, who's going to win this? And it becomes a partial knife fight. And it's getting quite tense. And then the kind of woman chips in, and she doesn't want anyone to hurt anyone. So, and then she's, like, trying to stop Manny go crazy. So she's, like, jumping on Manny, and every opportunity, she's, like, biting him and doing stuff to try and stop this. And they're all just, it's almost like a three-way, oh, we're going to kill each other. And then they all just, after a while, just simmer down and just go, what are we doing? We're on a runaway train. Where are our priorities? And I really like that. They kind of just all shut down and go, oh, forget it.
I don't know. I felt like the come down was a bit too long. Again, it's just one of the very numerous pacing issues of the film where everything just stops. Which is weird because up until that point, everything seems so, like, their journey on the train isn't very long. It's literally, we'll go here, we'll arbitrarily cut these things between the trains, and we'll get to this car, and then just kind of stops. It's like, but you haven't really travelled that far yet.
Do you mean in terms of distance, or what?
Well, yeah, literally in terms of distance, but also in terms of like doing stuff to try and stop the train.
Yeah, and then, I guess.
And then especially when they were, like, having their come down, they were like, we're all doomed. It's like, why don't you just smash the window and climb out that way?
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean,
it just seems like, really, all hope is gone right now? There's nothing else you can do?
I think it was a case of, like, they accepted it a bit, their own fate, and they were also so, like, it got so crazy and stressed out. They were kind of just calming down, really. And maybe they would have done, if, like, the helicopter hadn't turned up and given them the opportunity, they maybe would have, like, I think Manny would have tried himself to climb eventually. I think that's where it might have gone. I think they would have maybe kept trying. It's just,
just right then, they just needed to sit down and think.
They needed to chill. But I get what you're saying. Like, basically, all they needed to do was get to this train and stop it. They didn't, you know, it's better to die trying than to just give up, kind of thing, isn't it? And, like,
yeah,
they had, like, a little door in their way that they spent some time trying to open, and they could just keep trying to climb, or they could jump. maybe it was a little prolonged, but I felt it was like an emotional payoff for them all. It was kind of, you were relieved that they were calming down and not killing each other because you want them not to, like, go nuts, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I feel like it lasted a bit long and it kind of affected the pace of the film.
But luckily, the warden turns up and sets John Voight off again. And he goes nuts to the point of, like, he climbs out through the window because they got an opportunity to jump across the train now. And,
and makes the lamest jump ever and misses totally.
He disappears completely.
So we think he's dead, but of course
and
he isn't.
He's just sort of lying down a bit on a...
Well, no, he was... He was dangling, he was barely holding on. Like, I think the woman fell earlier and she was, like, in the wires and stuff. But, like, when he fell off, he was, like, scraping along the floor, barely, like, holding on. And then just about gets himself up. But it was a lame jump.
It makes sense to me how he ended up where he did.
Yeah, me neither.
It was weird. Also, what caught me as weird at that point is, because Buck and... Sarah are still in the train, kind of slightly holding each other. They've got on the floor. They don't really get up and check. Like, they don't particularly watch. They watch Voight jump, and then as soon they kind of, I don't know, assume he's dead, but they don't even get up to, like, look out the window again. They still stay on the floor. Like, I'd get up and at least look to see if he'd made it, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah.
Would they have been able to see, though?
No, maybe. I'd be maybe considering climbing up myself and making the jump, like Anthony says, not just give up. Now that the window's open, maybe, you know, that desperation can kick in again. But he clambers up and he hurts his hand some more. And like you say, then the warden lands on the train eventually, and after Voight has climbed into the front, and we have a little scuffle in the engine room. And it just results in the warden being handcuffed and John Voight being, I could press the button to stop the train and save us all. But you and me, we're in this train ride together and we're going to die because I am a sadist. And I've come to accept a weird fatalistic approach to the rest of our lives. I'm going to take you with me, warden, and I've gone completely nuts. But first, let me save the other two by unlatching the train because I am also a hero. Yeah. What do you guys make of John Voight's craziness combined with the fact that he was like, I will actually unlatch the train and save the other guys. I just won't save us all by pushing the little button, which would be so convenient.
I found it a bit odd as an ending because I didn't quite buy the relationship between Voight and the prison warden, because at this point... Oh, they've met face to face like once, and that's all we've had is like one exchange of words.
Yeah,
and they're both off screen hating each other.
There's an implied history to them, isn't there? But it's not much we're shown.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't quite buy it at the end, especially as he could have just as easily let him die and got off the train.
Yeah, it's that thing of you could jump. Oh well, he could unlatch it.
He could have unlatched it. From the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have just killed the guy. I mean, he didn't have to... He could have just, when he handcuffed the warden, just strangled him or something and killed him and then stopped the train. I mean, could have done any number of things. But I guess John Voight knew this was going to end in him going back to prison and he didn't want that. So I put it down to John Voight knowing he didn't know what to do with his life. He felt like he'd been a criminal. He'd been in prison so long. He couldn't see himself doing a regular job. So he didn't know what to do with his life. And he's basically going to go to jail if he survives. So he kind of accepted that and was like, well, the thing I'm going to do is I'm going to crash the train with the warden on. And then he did the right thing and let the other two go. But what was interesting for the ending for me, and I'm just kind of trying to justify the logic there a bit, he gets up on the top of the train and is like Rocky at the top of like the steps in Philadelphia. He's like punching the sky and he's like riding the train with his fists in the air. And then it just cuts and we don't really know what happens after that per se. And it whacks up a Shakespeare quote from like Richard III about beasts and pity and stuff. And you go, what?
Yeah.
Nothing, Crash. No, nothing. What? Did you guys feel that
climax.
Way?
Yeah, totally.
It was
totally.
A bit climactic.
It's like you can't slap on a bit of Shakespeare and be all profound and like, oh yeah, the beast, the nature of the beast, and are people... Ah, it's like, no, what? What happens to the people in the control room? Who's getting fired? Are they pleased? Or, like, what goes on after the train crash? What, like, do, does, you know, do... I mean, what do you... Okay, this is something we could debate before we wrap up, but what happens to the characters... We don't even know if the train derails and kills them both, technically. I mean, it's likely to. Mm. But what do you think happens to these three characters, and maybe the control room people? I don't. They'll just, you know, continue their jobs, maybe be demoted if they did badly or something. But what do you reckon happened to the characters?
Well, probably the two surviving people ended into an abusive relationship, which didn't end well for either of them down the line.
Agreed.
Oh, okay. Well, I being a bit more pessimistic, to me it says, well, I reckon Eric Roberts would have just been put back in jail, essentially, because once the train stops, yay, he survives, but, you know, the police will soon be there and they'll arrest him. There's not much running out in the snow you could do and get away. And even then, it's like, would he want the woman to come with him? Has she bonded enough to go with, or just are they just both grateful they're alive? I think in... She gives up working in the trains. She remembers this. It's a weird story. Maybe she visits him in prison if she can. And he's basically going to jail again. Mm. But I'd like the idea of them both running off. Maybe going into an abusive relationship that ends in tears further down the line. But maybe just running off into the snowy sunset and living happily together. Can't they? Maybe
not
John
Voight... They could live together, but it wouldn't be happy.
Maybe John Voight, at the last minute, jumps off the top of his train and grabs a branch and he swings down in a cool way and then lands safely. And
if we're
going to
have
off.
Flights of fancy, then he gets picked up by a giant eagle.
The helicopter comes back. That's what I'd have happen. And he grabs onto that, and then he kills the helicopter pilot and takes the helicopter and then goes to teach children in Guatemala how to play football or something.
How... Even better an anticlimax would it be if the train hit a snowbank and it just sort of slowed down.
It derails and then just slides along comfortably, yeah. And John Voight just loses his footing a bit and slips off and is like, oh, snow angels. Okay, but we're basically left to conclude that it's death and survival, but essentially not good stuff for the other characters.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so, you know, that was the film. I guess we've got some final thoughts to have, and maybe a rating system, maybe a famous train engine like Thomas the Tank or something could be the rating system. Which character from Thomas the Tank is this film? Or, so, you know, we can ponder a rating system. But conclusions, guys. Abby, what do you think?
I think... This film comes close to doing it right, but falls down in a few key areas that means it just didn't quite get there.
It's not quite Pelham 1-2-3, is it? It's
no.
A little bit rough and awkward around the edges.
But they did do well. They did do some stuff right.
Yeah, there are things to take away and have enjoyed, I think, as well. What would you... Can you think of a train-based...
Give me some time. Talk to Anthony.
Okay.
Give me some time.
Anthony, you've not been that favourable. Final thoughts?
I haven't. Honestly, there's enough in there to like. But overall, I just felt like the whole thing was, I've seen it before.
Yeah, it is. It takes too much from the conventions of this type of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, and just the pace for me, it could have been easily 15 minutes, 20 minutes shorter and would have packed much more of a punch, I think.
Yeah, I think there are even better runaway train type stories. There are, like, The Great Train Robbery is quite an interesting train movie, and there's a bunch to choose from. It's certainly not even the best of its kind. I really like Eric Roberts and John Voight in it, despite being weird. I kind of get on board with them. I think they look kind of interesting as well.
They were quite good, but I think putting them together, these two characters together for so long, kind of grated on me after a while.
Yeah, it kind of falls in the middle ground of ridiculous Hollywood buddy movie and gritty could it have really happened story. It's sort of a little bit not one, not the other, isn't it?
Mm. Do I have a train analogy? I don't know. Maybe it's kind of like one of those old steam trains which they only pull out now and again just for a kind of like a bit of a
nostalgia.
Journey down the road, yeah. Look at some trees outside, possibly have a nice cup of tea.
Yeah, so it does
everything like that it's supposed to, but it's, you know, it's not, it's a bit quaint, really. And it's not
a bit
that
dull
exciting.
For people. It's a bit dull for adrenaline junkies. It's not going to, like, blow your mind. It's just sort of, I guess it's a bit of fun, but not that much fun. Like you say, it's cups of tea and seeing the countryside, not, like, you know, adrenaline pumping trains going off cliffs. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there's some mileage in that. You could say, Anthony, that the whole film left you cold because it's in Alaska and it's snowy. Doesn't tie into trains.
I will say that, in fact. The whole film left me cold because it was in Alaska.
Yeah. Well, yes. I think my final thoughts would be I liked plenty of it. I don't really mind the problems because I found it engaging enough. I think I was just in the right frame of mind for it. And I caught like a lot, like other than the overall story arc, I think it was, I didn't know where it was going some of the time. A lot of the character stuff, I didn't know quite what they were going to do with it. So it kept me intrigued, but it has got a lot of cliches and things in it. And it's a little cheap at times and sort of, there's flaws, but I can forgive. I guess if it's anything, it's the naughty trucks from Thomas the Tank Engine. They're like sort of the mischievous little, like not they're not bad enough to be bad guys in Thomas the Tank, but they're not good guys. They're just kind of, it's just nasty. And they're naughty. It doesn't tie that well in, does it? But they're the naughty trucks. And I'm trying to think, I don't know, why they are. Because they're full of coal. And they always annoy the fat controller. Here we go. We're getting somewhere. And they're the source of the... No, I don't know. I can't do it. Abby, have you got any better rating systems of trains?
Kinda. I guess.
Go on.
You know how... In the realms of the imagination, travelling across India by train sounds quite nice.
Like the Darjeeling Limited.
But then you get on a train in India and there's way, way too many people on it. There's some on the roof. You can't sit down. There's chickens. And you're just sort of like, this isn't how this was supposed to go. I'm getting to my destination. I'm technically doing what I came to do. This isn't what this is supposed to be like.
It's long. You're meant to be having a kind of gap year adventure where you travel across India and it's amazing and your eyes are open. But really, it's still a long train journey that you have to suffer through. Okay. Well, you know, our terrible train rating system aside, we've chatted about Runaway Train. Maybe not a victory, but certainly an interesting chat. And maybe you'll, listener, this is you, maybe you'll join us again next time for another spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray! And I don't know what I'm doing that voice for.
I didn't get to use my one piece of trivia that I wanted to.
Please do.
This film was partially written by and had a role for Edward Bunker, who was Mr. Blue in Reservoir Dogs.
That's right. I'm surprised that he was in it. I didn't notice at the time, but when you pointed out, it's like, yeah, Mr. Blue, he's in it at the start. He's in the prison. He's
Jonah.
Yeah.
The one who ends up in the head brace.
He's the closest thing that John Voight had to a friend and partner in prison. He was just, he gave him a nice hug. The guy went to solitary confinement he basically murdered John Voight's assassin, or John Voight's attempted assassin. It was quite a bold, weird friend. They must have had a more deep relationship than the film gave them, really. It seemed to be something implied more than anything else. But he was in it, and he partially wrote it.
Yes. I couldn't say how much. I'm not privy to that information.
Good job, Mr. Blue. Good job.
Indeed.
didn't notice you, but now that Abby pointed out, it's interesting.
So that's all I got.
That's what happens when you put a bit of Kurosawa with a bit of Reservoir Dogs. You get a mediocre Runaway Train story.
Aww.
Ah, it's fine. It's fine. Check it out. And that's goodbye from us.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Choo-choo.